Hello and welcome everyone back to another episode of the Publisher Lab. I'm Tyler Bishop, and joined alongside me today, actually both of us coming back from trips to other countries, yours much further away than mine, is Whitney Wright. Whitney, welcome back.
Yeah, it's good to be back. It's been a couple of weeks, but busy couple of weeks. Like you said, we were hosting, headline sponsor for Affiliate Gathering in York. So I was away for that. And then I was visiting some family in Northern Africa for the last week. And I just got back a couple of days ago. So I think I'm finally on the right time zone. It's a lot easier heading west.
So I mean,
you just gotta quite the travel schedule. I know. Yeah. It's been wild, but it was really fun. Good to see family. North Africa's, you know, really interesting and gorgeous. And you were in Cabo, right?
Yeah. I was just jetted down to Mexico, which we're based out of San Diego for the listeners that don't know. So it's almost like a domestic flight. So not too far.
Yeah. Have a good time. It looked nice.
Yeah, it was fun. The weather was great, and I'm sure it's probably not quite the same as Northern Africa. I actually couldn't tell you at all what the weather is probably like in Northern Africa. I guess it's sort warm. It's north of the equator, so at least it's summer there. How was the affiliate gathering? Are publishers generally talking about in person a lot of the things we've been talking about on the show?
Yeah, definitely. We had a speaking session at the very end of the day, and we talked about, you know, how AI is changing or going to change a lot of things, already changing things, but, making some big changes in the near and distant future, and, kind of where publishers, should focus their attention and if they should be worried or not. And a lot of publishers, you know, before that, during the event, we had a booth and they were coming and talking to us. They were excited to talk to us, but also, yeah, a lot of concern about, what's going on in the news. AI is the big thing right now, and, a lot of concerns about it. So it was good to get that FaceTime with publishers and, have some one-on-one conversations, and also just kind of spread some knowledge about what we know about, you know, what's going on with AI and what we know about Google and our experience with it, and just where we could see this kind of going and how it's going to change. But it's not, you know, this like apocalypse situation.
I did see that there was a joint statement of the coalition of the people that want, you know, AI research stopped for or paused or whatever, they released these guidelines today for the primary goal being that to prevent AI from creating the extinction of humankind. So I think that's a pretty good just overarching goal. But I think we're a long ways from that. And I think sometimes that's applied to industry as well, where people think like, you know, there's going to be this complete industry or job extinction. And that may be in some regards in the future, but we're still pretty far away from that. We're at a point right now where AI is this this really great tool that if you can master it, that may be like number one what keeps you around, but also like what propels you forward, and others maybe that don't know how to use it properly or are a little bit late to the game, they could get left in the dust. And so I do think it's probably the most relevant topic right now for publishers.
Yeah, definitely. And we are going to talk about it today because Google Search Generative Experience is live for some people that were on the wait list for it. So we're going to talk about that in a little bit. First, we're going to talk about YouTube's algorithm and what people need to know for 2023. And then we're also going to be talking about a publisher report, a publishing trends report, which kind of focuses on that declining traffic is a major issue for a lot of publishers. We can just head right into it. So we have an article from Search Engine Journal. It's YouTube's algorithm, what you need to know in 2023. So there's a recent interview between YouTube's creator liaison and YouTube's growth and discovery lead. And they discussed the algorithm's future and how that might impact creators in, this coming year. Or I guess we're already pretty much halfway through it. But it's like June in 2 days. Specifically said that audience satisfaction is way more important than trying to like satisfy the algorithm, which is something that Google is always saying as well. It just is. Trying to figure out what the robot wants is not really going to get you anywhere. So they say, while watch time is a commonly known factor that the algorithm considers, that YouTube also runs surveys and recommendations, which helps the algorithm identify patterns. Looking at various signals like likes, dislikes, watch time, and that developing a long-term relationship with audiences will drive creator success. And even for smaller audiences, YouTube has a team focused on helping them identify their audience using various approaches like assessing video titles and descriptions. And ultimately, that emerging technologies like AI will shape the future of content discovery on YouTube, like large language models. So what have you kind of heard about video this year and AI? I haven't really heard about how AI is to be implemented in YouTube.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess some of this is they're figuring it out as they go, because I think, you know, there's certain things with AI that, you know, I think a lot of different businesses and just startups are working on. And until you find this thing that's like maybe way different or not something that, you know, we're imagining right now, like the best example I could give is like the new Photoshop. So everybody was like, AI is going to eliminate the need for graphic designers. And, you know, what's going to happen to Photoshop? You know, no one will need to use it anymore. But then when you see the way that they've applied and used AI inside of the new tool, the new version they released, you're like, how can anyone else compete? Like, this thing is so amazing what you can produce with it. And I think there's a video application of that specific example as well, where all of a sudden it's like you're able to produce this like amazing video and not just like, you know, okay, great, AI can make video and maybe it's not bad, it's good, it provides the information. But like AI, if you can imagine now, like you're making a Hollywood movie and the resources and the time and energy to produce something like in CGI or whatever, you could just do it from your laptop with no training. Like, wow, you know what I mean? Like the types of things you could produce there are pretty incredible. And I think it still lends itself to somebody that is a bit of an artist, you know, because you still have to kind of like imagine things. So I think with the advent of things like that, what you're going to continue to see is the people that can create content that differentiates them or is desirable. So you make cool stuff for people that are looking for, you know, something, or, you know, you can catch a, you know, a trend or something like that. I think there's always going to be ways to build an audience that way. So it doesn't matter if it's a YouTube platform or TikTok or Google search, it applies to everything, that like people will want to find your content. And once they do, if it's good, then, you know, like the referrals, you won't necessarily need some type of platform to send you that traffic. But yeah, I would say if we're learning anything right now, it's that do not just like hit your business to the wagon of like optimizing for one specific platform.
Yeah, definitely. Things are changing so fast. And I think considering what has been said about YouTube after this article, it's publishing, it's kind of the same rules as regular publishing, video publishing. You know, it's audience engagement and making relationships with your audience and making them want to continue to come back to your content, which then, you know, in the, like they said, like the algorithm looks at watch times, but also looks at, you know, likes and dislikes. And so the more that people engage with your content, the more popular it's going to be. And that's just the way that digital publishing is as well. And I think that, I think that people get caught up in, like we've said before, like the algorithm manipulation, trying to figure out what it wants and then serving it. But the algorithm is looking at what people want. And so you have to figure that out. Yeah, exactly. So, I think that
as long as you know, the audience is coming from a platform, you know, and you're an inconsequential portion of that, meaning like they don't know you from Adam, they come to your site for the first time, or they, you know, get your video or watch your video. That's a rental, you know, you're renting that audience from the platform. And you can run a business that way for, you know, a period of time. But I, in a lot of ways, I feel like creators and video, you know, platform publishers, I feel like they're a little behind what website publishers have been learning over the last decade. So I think website publishers are a little bit more skeptical and a little bit more like risk averse and kind of already hedging their bets when they can. And I think video creators have been told this for a while, but now they're starting to see exactly why. And, you know, publishers with Google updates and Facebook changes and stuff like that over the years have sort of, you know, they've had to live through a lot of punishment. So now they've got thicker skin.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, video publishing is only increasing in popularity, especially short form. And I know that YouTube is also going to be focusing on that a lot. I actually just saw that on another article that YouTube is getting rid of their stories. They just, it wasn't doing anything for them. And so they're focusing more on shorts and obviously long form content.
Yeah. The YouTube interface has changed quite a bit, especially if you pull it up on like a TV or something. You do have sort of a Snapchat-y experience in a lot of ways now, first, where that's sort of like the feature as opposed to, you know, like your subscribed video, you know, feed or whatever.
Yeah. Have you seen, they're like celebrating, I think it's like 18 years or whatever. And like the first, there's like a strip of, videos, like the most popular initial videos on YouTube. And it's, just the I don't know, the quality and what they're about. Yeah. One of them's Justin Bieber singing from like in his bedroom, you know, like back in the day before he's popular, but yeah, it was just interesting kind of seeing like how far videos come in almost the last two decades.
Absolutely.
So our next topic is Google search generative experience is life for some. And this is from Search Engine Roundtable, Barry Schwartz, of course. So on May 25th, the waitlisted users for the new Google search generative experience, they received access. And so a lot of the article was showing screenshots, which we're going to throw a couple in on top of our video just to kind of show you what it looks like. But if you've paid attention at all, you've probably seen pictures from either Google's I/O presentation or from people screenshotting it like this. So it actually is more clickable than I think people anticipated. It does show results of like clickable links, and you can expand the answers and look at these links. And so then some queries, it will auto-generate the results, the AI results, and then shorter queries will give you a button that you can click like auto-generate. And then AI generated responses are obviously not available yet for like business profiles, or not for business profiles, for news related or politics. I think that they're kind of a little worried about that.
You know, they should be.
False information. Yeah, exactly. Medical information has disclaimers about it's not a diagnosis. Featured snippets will still show up
actually underneath
the, I mean, it has some good information. It has like really good information. And then at the bottom is just like, this is not a medical diagnosis.
I think the platforms are going to really struggle with stuff like that, because I think there's going to be folks out there that are willing to take the risk, because, you know, bankruptcy isn't a huge deal to a company that started, you know, 30 days ago versus, you know, someone like Google, who's not going to really be more risk averse. So the, you know, the one that's going to be like, no, like ours is medical advice, come to us.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There goes a vertical of business.
Yeah. I did see some, there was an article about some like comments and complaints about it. And one of them was that it was directly quoting publishers' articles. And some publishers were like, it should be put in quotes if it's an actual quote, or like, it's not super obvious that it's a direct quote. And so it kind of looks plagiarism-like, but then Google kind of quickly came in and like showed, it's like, oh no, the link is right here. And it shows that we are quoting you. It's just not super obvious in the AI results. So they're like, thank you for your feedback. So yeah, it's super interesting. I actually just got on the wait list because I want to play around with it. Had to use my personal email because it said it wasn't available for my work email, which makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, it's not available for work space yet. But have you looked that around at all?
Yeah, I have. I've seen the demos and stuff. I haven't had access to it yet. And honestly, I haven't even signed up for the wait list. I'm not very bullish on it, because I think that it's going to be behind immediately. Like if you use OpenAI with plugins, like all the different, you know, feature ads and stuff like that, I think that you're going to find that that is more of the experience of what most of us are looking for when we're wanting to use AI for something, as opposed to basically having this AI search engine that's augmented with a chatbot and memory. And for that reason, I actually think that, you know, like Google is going to probably fail at this avenue, because I think that users are going to find more and more that what they really want is basically like an AI engine, and then ways to just sort of like modularly add features and functions for their specific, you know, use cases or what they want on top of that. And, you know, like there's even, you know, a plugin that allows you to basically use ChatGPT as a search engine. And that experience is probably really similar to what Google has, maybe a little bit dumbed down, but I think it'll maybe, you know, benefit from what Google did in the early days of search, and it's simpler. Google seems kind of like, it seems to me that it would strike a lot of people that maybe are not technically savvy is intimidating.
Definitely. Just, you know, I think most people interested in it right now are like SEO experts and publishers and stuff. It's not the general public that's really, I don't even think half the people even know that this is happening.
No, like I can promise you my wife does not know.
Yeah. And so she's, you know, not waiting on the wait list to get this. Yeah. Yes, I think it will take a lot to adopt it. I think that there will be a very small group of people that find a lot of use out of it. And that being probably people in this industry more, maybe, that are more aware of it and more up to date on what's going on with generative AI and AI search. But like you said, I think it's just it. I don't know if I would agree completely that it's going to fail, but I think it's going to be. It might, I guess it could fail, but like they'll figure something out and they'll like redo it or something. Absolutely. But I think that it will definitely have slow adoption. There was another article out there that was talking about how like, you know, search is going to look different in the next 10 years, but like it's going to be really slow. It's not just going to like happen tomorrow. And so I think, you know, we've discussed a lot of publishers are concerned with like this doomsday, but nothing's changing right now. People are just basically playing around with AI. This is what it kind of feels like. And it's like, what else can we put it on?
Yeah. And I've said this since the beginning, and that doesn't necessarily mean that I'm going to be just completely wrong about it, but I do sort of see some signs that I'm going to be right about this. And that's that, you know, the things that are going to be these big exponential leaps will actually come from something that's rather benign, where it's like, you know, I know for a lot of different things that I use ChatGPT for, it's like I was using it for a presentation. I was basically using it as a research assistant where I was like, hey, I need an example of a time when, you know, in the 1800s where somebody surprised everyone with something that they knew that nobody else did. And, you know, I get back at these examples. I'm like, well, I need a historical one that people from lots of different backgrounds and cultures would understand, maybe something famous. And then it comes back, gives me a different one. And it's like, you know, it's like having a personal research assistant for, you know, presentations. And I think, you know, I'm seeing a lot more of these quote unquote, like agents, open source agents and things like that. But I think there's going to get more of these that are wrapped up and developed so that you'll have an agent that has the OpenAI backend engine, and it'll be able to do a complete job for you. You can think about the types of things you might want to hire an intern or assistant for. But then imagine that assistant that does, you know, maybe all the data entry or, you know, some kind of menial task can do it in like 3 seconds. So it's like, wow, I've got this, like, you know, I've got something now that can actually chat with my customers. I've got something now that can actually make recommendations on products or change my website in real time. Every time Amazon makes an update or a product gets removed, I can actually swap those products out in real time because my agent's just always on the ball and looking at it, and I don't even have to do anything. So I think there are going to be more and more of these like agents, and there'll be a few of those that drive like major, major change because they'll provide so much unique value.
Definitely. I think that also, besides people in this industry, probably younger Gen Z and Alpha, who's, you know, getting a little older, they're more likely to probably adopt this, and like want to play with it and figure it out. And so as those two generations, especially Gen Z, since it's kind of happening right now, as they become kind of the broader, workforce and adult, population, and as, you know, boomers kind of phase out, more, it'll be more adopted. But you know, I think the largest population right now are the baby boomers, and they're most of them are not using AI.
yeah.
I can't, the amount of times I had to, my mom, also came to Africa with me, and the amount of times I had to help my mom with her cell phone, like, she's not using AI.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where I think, parents are on the, far end of being able to adopt technology. But I think that there's, there's a lot of people that aren't quite that far, but like still pretty close. And I think that those ones are going to be really struggling until you have an AI agent or interface or mechanism that's as easy as an app, as Apple made phones, you know, like there was a lot of people that were basically like we could never use a BlackBerry or smartphone. And then Apple just made their user interface so intuitive that like your mom and dad can kind of use a smartphone, you know, like my dad, it's a miracle when I get phone calls, and now he's on Instagram. He sends my friends messages. And it's like, every time that happens, I'm like, God, I want to know, I want a video of what happened on his end before that message was sent.
So much growth for them. I know my dad like used to refuse to like text people, and now I get these like long like messages from him, and they're like kind of these run-on sentences and stuff. But
Hey, my name is Terrence, business intelligence analyst here at Azoic. Want to get the best insights with your website to maximize your revenue? Azoic Ads with big data analytics is your answer to that question. Did you know publishers that spend at least 2 hours in our big data analytics earn on average 10 times more than publishers that have never used it before? With our analytics, tie revenue to everything, whether it be SEO insights, best performance of your authors, the location of your users, and much more. Look at your data like you never have before. Check out more information in the description below and try Big Data Analytics in your Zoic account today.
So our last topic is a publishing trends report by EchoBox. It's an annual survey that they do. So what they found is that increasing traffic remains a top priority for publishers. 63% said that that was a top priority. In last year's survey, declining website traffic was only a major concern for 25%, and now it's up to 47%, with 53% of publishers reporting that they will prioritize finding new audiences this year. Creating video content is almost up at 50%. People said that they'd be doing that. And the survey also found that for 48% of respondents, applications such as ChatGPT have changed the way that they think about the potential use of AI in their business. And for as far as social media, Instagram remains the platform that most publishers, 66%, believe will be more important to them this calendar year. I think TikTok is like super interesting for people, but with all the government stuff going on, they're probably a little hesitant to jump on board. And Instagram is still wildly popular amongst pretty much everyone is on there. You know, you got boomers, you got millennials, Gen Z is even on there still.
It's blended for now.
Yeah, for now.
Although I will say that the generation that is, I think they're calling it Alpha now, but after Gen Z, I do imagine that Instagram is going to have a very Facebooky type experience for them.
It'll just be millennials.
Yeah, because I think to a certain extent, social media is where you flee where your parents are at, you know? But
sorry, Facebook is.
And so it's not my greatest area of prediction expertise. I've been wrong about social media trends and stuff like that before. But I will say this is something I keep cautioning our audience. Like you'll hear me talk about this in a billion different ways. And I know it was the topic of our discussion at affiliate gathering as well. And that is, you can't be boring right now. You can't be, you can't be so risk averse and, reliant on the way that things have been or the things that you think are smart investments of time and resources right now, because the only way you get killed in the next 3 to 4 years is to do everything the exact way you've been doing it. Because the way that things have been done in publishing for the last 5 or 6 years are going to fundamentally change, and it will get you left behind. And it doesn't mean you have to make dramatic changes, but I don't think that Instagram is a platform worth focus. I think that there's definitely applications for it. TikTok, maybe more. I also find it very interesting that, you know, like, so they're saying here that declining traffic is not the issue. It's these publishers saying this is their concern. We've not seen that yet. We've not seen that publishers are getting less traffic overall. We are seeing a greater mix. I mean, we we're looking at, you know, billions of, I mean, almost tens of billions of page views a month. So from, I mean, 50,000, 60,000 sites, and we're just not seeing it, but we are seeing a more diverse mix of traffic. And the thing that I'm kind of thinking with a lot of this stuff at the moment is that there is going to be opportunities that are twofold. One is to modularize your content so that it's available universally across platforms and can be requested by, you know, different types of agents and things like that. And, you know, like anytime there's an opportunity for you to license or make money off of an API to your content, I think that that's a emerging opportunity. But then the other one is just get to know your audience, make content for people, because people will find your content. You can never rely on these, you know, different platforms to send people to your content, because that's going to change. But as long as people like your content, you're going to be set. And I know people hear that ad nauseum, but it is so true. And right now, I think you could just make great content for people that they want. And it may be slower, but eventually you'll succeed versus, you know, you're able to, you know, capitalize on doing something really quickly, but maybe the content focus isn't necessarily directed exclusively at your audience. I think it's risky.
Yeah. Do you have access to your Twitter now?
No, I still don't. Jesus. Oh, I would love to get it back. If somebody knows somebody at Twitter that can help out, I've been without my account for a month and a half. I got two-factor locked out and I cannot find a human being to help me.
Oh God. I was just wondering if you, since you generally are active on Twitter, if you've kind of seen any, concerns about declining website traffic, or if, you know, people are talking about it. I'm not super active on Twitter as far as digital publishing.
It's a discussion that's taken place, but it's just like whenever you see algorithm updates from Google, where it's like you're always going to hear from the people that are seeing, you know, a drop or, you know, some kind of negative impact, whether it's even related or not. But overall, the aggregate information that we see is not the case. So I would say I don't know that I've actually seen, you know, a lot of smoke out there either that people have been experiencing this.
Okay. Yeah, I think that ultimately the differentiator, like you said, focusing on people, authenticity is also really popular and important right now. It kind of shifted. It was like really high quality content. And kind of, you know, influencers. And now there's kind of this backtrack of like, no, we want like real information from real people. Even like the less showy it is, it feels more real. And, especially the younger generations are really interested in that. So I think anything you can do that like shows you're a person is really important. And then also I just think that people that are concerned about AI are likely, or that, you know, are really concerned about AI, they're likely the ones that it's kind of this whole situation. I feel like it's going to weed out the really good publishers from kind of like the ones that are just trying to like, you know, figure out the algorithm and like get ranking and stuff. Like it's going to kind of separate those two. And I think the people that are really concerned are the ones that are like always trying to figure out what the robot wants rather than like what the people want. And I think the people that'll be really successful are the ones that focus on their audience, are the ones that are trying new things, and just are really authentic people that enjoy publishing and are like passionate about it.
100%, I agree. And I think, you know, I think it's a benefit to our audience out there that, you know, if you're listening to a podcast about publishing, you've probably either an OG or this is something you're passionate about. And so I would just say, like, I've seen this already, I think a lot with influencers, where you've had people that have, their goal was to be an influencer. And I think there's a huge dynamic difference between trying to be an influencer, which I think is like the number one job that kids want to be. It's like a YouTuber or an influencer, and actually being somebody that is that, you know. The example I've given forever is like, you know, you can't try to be cool. You know, it's like the harder you try, almost like the worse, more cringe it is.
It is. Yeah.
But you know, like you can be it, but the thing is like it comes from, you know, a genuine experience and authenticity. And I think that, you know, to this day, it's like, it's very easy for me to make really good content on jujitsu because I love jujitsu, right? And mm-hmm. I'm very plugged in to a lot of things there still. And so it's something I'm passionate about. So I know I can make great content for that audience. So I have zero concerns about that. But if I, you know, tried to make really great content on, I don't know, traveling to Northern Africa, a place where I've never been, you know, number one, I'm not going to be able to share any enthusiasm that people that go there have. And I might be able to get all the right data and information, but like, I'm not going to be able to capitalize on what it is for a community like that to really, like, what is it they're looking for? What did they tap into? Like, what are the idiosyncrasies that kind of like really endear an audience to you? And I think that that's going to be, that's a difference maker right now. More so than ever, actually.
Yeah, totally agree. Well, was there anything else that you've seen in the news that you wanted to discuss or anything that we touched on that you wanted to extrapolate on?
No, I don't think so. I think this is a really exciting time. And, you know, the name of the game is change. So every publisher right now should be, you know, at least exploring or trying something that's dynamically different than what they probably thought they'd be doing this year. So yeah, just try new things.
Definitely. Well, you can find us at publisherlab.org if you want to leave us a comment, a question, a concern, a critique. There's a box at the top there. We see that all the time. We check it every week. We'll talk about it on the podcast. So leave us a comment. You can also leave us a comment on YouTube. We check those too. You can check out our YouTube channel. We're on there if you'd rather watch this than just listen. We also publish these blogs and or publish these podcasts in blog format if you are able to listen to the audio. And you can find us on all our social media platforms. If you're looking for updates on the podcast, we throw some things on the Zoic social media platforms sometimes. And I think that's it for this week. This has been another episode of the Publisher Lab.